Welcome to That's History, our regular segment where we look at current events and find echoes, parallels, and resonance in the events of the past. I'm Chris Cetullo, and I'm joined, as always, by Jonathan Zimmerman, professor of history at New York University. Welcome, Jonathan.
Good to be here, as always.
Well, we're going to talk about violence, John, but violence in pursuit of play and pleasure and money, and that most violent of sports, football. Violence on the field and violence now off the field. But first, for the violence on the field, the landmark case about violence in football and its effect on those professionals who play it was heard recently and adjudicated in Philadelphia. It's about concussions.
Indeed. And as part of that case, the NFL acknowledged that they think a third of their retired players have developed or will develop cognitive impairment as a function of playing in the game.
This has a long history, concerns that the game was too violent. It may be fun, but it did too much damage to the young men that play. It goes back to a pretty famous guy.
It goes back, of course, to Teddy Roosevelt, who was a big sports fan and a big football fan. He felt that football was an extremely important test of manhood, which was an idea that he thought was really under challenge in a kind of urbanizing and bureaucratizing America. But he also recognized that the sport was literally killing people, because it was played without pads or any kind of protection. So in an effort to save it, he convened a meeting of the coaches of Harvard, Yale, and Princeton at the White House in 1905 to try to reform the game so its brutality, and that was Roosevelt's word, was removed.
And I assume, unlike some successors of his in the White House, he didn't propose any plays to the coaches.
Nixon?
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Who proposed a play to the Redskins that
right.
didn't work. Yeah.
So
yeah.
How? What was the outcome of this meeting? What happened?
Well, what happened was it actually triggered several other big meetings among different universities, and it led to reforms of the game to try to make it safer. And the big theme in the history of football is successive efforts to make the game safer that haven't worked. So the big reform at the turn of the 20th century was the forward pass. Before that time, football at the college and high school level really resembled rugby. There was literally a scrum on every play. So you had all the players clumped together. And the forward pass was an attempt to alleviate that and to make the game safer by spreading out the players.
But one of the fathers of modern football knew that that was not really a solution.
Indeed. I mean, Walter Camp had himself been the father of some of the reforms, including the idea of a down. That is the idea that you stop play instead of having a free-for-all after every play. But Camp said that the forward pass would actually have the opposite effect because players would get bigger and stronger, and most of all, they would get up ahead of steam. And so the collisions would be much more brutal. And indeed, it turns out that he was correct.
Right, and a lot of the plays that have caused some of the most frightening injuries in NFL football have been exactly that. The pass thrown, the receiver up in the air, and the defensive back flying at them like a missile.
Indeed, and it's important to remember, too, that since the 1980s, first in the NFL and then at college and even at high school, offenses have gone to these pass-first offenses. So there are many more pass plays, which means many more types of these collisions. And also because, of course, the clock stops after a failed pass, there are just many more plays, period, in a football game because of the pass-first offenses. And that just increases the opportunity for injury.
All right, but if you look at old-time photos of players playing football, they're running around in these very thin leather helmets. There's very little padding. I mean, the players today look completely armored. Why hasn't that reduced the level of injury?
Well, here's the thing. The pattern's the same. You know, at the beginning, there are no helmets, and indeed some players grow their hair long to try to give themselves a little bit of protection. And then you have leather helmets, which we think were introduced by an Annapolis shoemaker for a midshipman at Navy whose doctor had told him that if he got hit in the head again, he would die. They wear these leather helmets. They don't provide very much protection either. So in the 30s and 40s, people come up with plastic helmets, which do provide more protection, but themselves become weapons. So again, the very element that you introduce to make the game more safe, in fact, has the opposite effect because then players start to tackle with their helmets, so-called leading with your helmet. Of course, then there are rules that are promulgated to try to prevent that, but it happens anyway. And some of the most serious injuries now happen because of plastic helmets.
Right. So now we have the phenomenon in professional sports, in the NFL, of a number of very famous athletes who have either committed suicide, like Junior Seau or Mike Webster, or the other sad stories of people in their 30s and 40s who are severely impaired in their brain function. There's a lot of research that has come out eventually that it has to do with the repeated trauma to the brain. But a lot of people still say they're professionals, they're well compensated, it's their choice. But there's another level to that conversation about the violence of football.
Right. And the other level, of course, is the high school and indeed the Pop Warner level. I think it's so interesting on the question, especially of concussions, how much ink we give, how much attention to the college and the pro level, and how little to the high school and the Pop Warner level. Because, of course, there are many, many, many more players at the junior level. We know from our doctors that the risk of injury, of permanent injury, is much greater. And also, they're not the age of majority. They're not citizens. They're kids. But they're also the minor leagues for college and the pros. Mm-hmm. One way of thinking of Pop Warner and high school football, which together we think enrolls 3 million young people, almost all boys and young men, is as the grooming station, mm-hmm. you know, the minor leagues for college and the pros. And it seems to me that's where the real dangers are, again, because of the raw number of kids and also because of the potential of injury to developing skulls and brains.
So we'd be remiss in talking about the topic of violence in football without taking note of even more recent events than the concussion suits, which is the Ray Rice domestic abuse incident where he beat up his fiance in the elevator of an Atlantic City hotel. And the latest thing from just this week with Adrian Peterson, arguably the best running back in football, accused of rather violently and painfully disciplining his pretty young children. Is there any evidence or what can you say from a historical perspective around the notion that playing a violent game leads to more violence off the field?
Well, it's plausible, but we don't know that. It does seem to make a certain amount of sense if your job is to literally punish people, that perhaps that would seep into your domestic life. But in fact, we don't have strong evidence that the incidence of domestic or family violence is greater, say, in the NFL than it is of the population at large. However, we do know that the rate of brain injury is. Mm-hmm. So again, it's at least plausible to suspect that some of the domestic violence we see in NFL families actually comes from concussion, because one of the cognitive impairments is a loss of executive function, that is, of self-control.
Yeah, so in the history of the NFL, which is clearly at this point the most popular and lucrative sport in America and probably in the history of this fairly recent development known as professional sports, we're probably sitting right now at the greatest inflection point of crisis in the history of this organization.
I agree. I mean, between the concussions and the family violence, let's remember with respect to concussions that there was another White House meeting last year convened not by Teddy Roosevelt, but of course by Barack Obama, and it was on the subject of concussions. With respect to domestic violence, I think it's important to understand that even without evidence that there's greater incidence of this in the NFL, we can use this moment to think about the way we as a society approach this problem. And I think in some ways we look at the wrong end of the telescope when we, you know, ask questions like, are football players worse abusers than other people? We'll probably never know that. Instead, I think we can use these moments and we can use sports in general to cast a light on social trends and especially social attitudes.
And Jonathan, I have one concluding question for you. I know. You just have two girls, but if you had a boy right now, would you let him play Pop Warner football?
Like President Obama, I would think twice, and then the third time I thought, I would say no, because I think there's really, really strong evidence that especially at the junior level, the risk of not just an injury but a lasting injury is great, and not just to your shoulder, your knee, but to your brain.
Jonathan Zimmerman, thanks as always for the insights.
Thanks. It was good to talk.